All right, so we're diving into a case today that really kind of makes you think, can a verbal promise, like just someone's word, actually be stronger than like the actual law?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's Alaska Democratic Party versus Rice. And it's this whole story about like someone gets a job offer, they move, and then boom, a legal fight breaks out that basically says, hey, the statute of frauds, we don't need to follow that.
Well, yeah, and what's really interesting about this whole thing is like it brings up this, this tension between the law as it's written and like being fair.
Right.
You've got this thing, the statute of frauds, right? It's there to protect people from like those he said, she said situations, especially when you have a contract that's going to last more than a year.
Right.
But then you got this other thing, this idea called promissory estoppel, and it's basically saying, hey, sometimes a promise is just a promise, even if it's not written down.
Yeah, see, the statute of frauds always felt pretty solid to me. Like, get in writing, protect yourself. So how did a verbal agreement even like become the central part of this whole case?
Okay, so rewind back to 1992. We've got Kathleen Rice. She's been working with the Alaska Democratic Party already.
Okay.
And the party's chair-elect, this guy named Reg Wakefield, offers her this, well, pretty sweet deal, right?
Okay.
The executive director position, $36,000 a year, benefits, the whole nine yards.
Oh, wow.
And he says, yeah, this is for at least 2 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see why someone would be like, okay, I'm interested.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This verbal agreement, well, it didn't exactly go as planned.
I was going to say, I have a feeling this is where things like go south.
Yeah, so Rice, she takes Wakefield at his word, right? She resigns from her job in Maryland, packs up all her stuff, and moves all the way to Alaska for this new job.
Oh, wow. Talk about a big leap of
A
faith.
huge leap of faith.
Yeah.
But this is where things kind of, well, take a turn.
Yeah, I figured. What happened?
Yeah, so the party's executive committee, they basically say, Wakefield, you can't actually hire her.
Oh, no.
And just like that, Rice is stuck. Like, what's she gonna do? And all because of this, this promise, this verbal promise.
Wow. I mean, talk about a bait and switch. But
Yeah.
here's the thing that I don't get. You mentioned like the statute of frauds earlier. So shouldn't that have protected the party? Like no written contract, no deal.
You would think, right? I mean, that's exactly what they argued. This whole agreement, it's not enforceable because it wasn't in writing.
Right.
But Rice's lawyers, they had a different idea,
Okay.
promissory estoppel.
Okay, so hold on, break it down for me. How can someone's spoken word, hold up in court against something like the statute of frauds, which is, the law?
Well, that's where things get really, really interesting.
Okay.
Promissory estoppel, it's not about like completely ignoring the statute of frauds.
Okay.
Think of it more like a safety valve. It's a way to prevent injustice. Like when someone relies on a promise and things go bad, even if it wasn't, officially written down.
So it's kind of like saying, look, we know, written contracts are important, but we're not going to let people just make promises they never intended to keep just because they didn't like write it down all fancy.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are a few things you got to show to prove promissory estoppel. There's this thing called Restatement Section 139, and it lays it all out. It says, and I'm paraphrasing a bit here, that a promise is binding if the person making the promise knew the other person would rely on it, and they actually did rely on it, and the only way to avoid being unfair is to enforce the promise.
Okay, that's a lot. So like what are the key things we're looking for here?
Okay, so there are basically three things you got to prove. First, was it reasonable for the person making the promise to think the other person would depend on it? Like, was it obvious?
Okay.
Second, did the person actually rely on that promise and do something big because of it?
Okay.
And third, would it be like totally unfair to not enforce the promise?
Okay, so if we apply that to Rice's case, it seems like all three things are like right there. I mean, offering a job with specific details, a timeline, it's pretty clear the person would believe it,
Oh,
right?
yeah, absolutely. It's not like Wakefield just casually mentioned it.
Right.
He made a real offer, specific details. Of course, Rice thought it was legit.
And then she went and quit her job, moved across the country. That's not nothing.
Exactly. The court agreed. Her actions were directly because of that promise. She packed up her life. That's not just daydreaming.
Right.
And wouldn't it be totally wrong to just let the party, get away with it?
Yeah, I mean, she really had to deal with the consequences of their actions.
Right, and the court agreed. They looked at everything and said, okay, the only way to make this right is to enforce this promise, even though it wasn't written down.
So it's like sometimes being fair is more important than following the exact letter of the law.
Exactly. It's all about balance.
Okay, so round one definitely goes to Kathleen Rice.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But I can't help but wonder, was Wakefield, as the chair-elect, even allowed to make that promise? He wasn't officially the chair yet, right?
Ah, good question. And this brings us to something else really interesting, implied and apparent authority.
Okay.
Did the party, like through their actions, make it seem like Wakefield could make this kind of offer?
Well, I mean, they did elect him chair. Maybe that made Rice think he was speaking for the whole party, even if he wasn't officially in charge yet.
That's exactly what the court looked at. They wanted to know if it seemed reasonable for someone to believe Wakefield had the power to make that offer, just based on what the party was doing.
So even though he wasn't officially the chair, it looked like he could make these decisions.
Exactly. The court said the party basically gave him a cloak of authority by electing him.
Oh, okay.
From Rice's point of view, she didn't know all the inner workings of the party. It made sense for her to think he was in charge.
So they were held responsible for, like, the image they created, even if they didn't directly say, hey, Wakefield can make these promises.
Exactly. And it shows you how important it is for organizations to be really clear about who can make what decisions.
Right. So they don't end up in this kind of mess.
Exactly.
This is getting really interesting. So what kind of stuff did they actually show in court? Like, what evidence?
Well, this went to trial. Emails, people testifying, all the usual stuff.
Okay.
But the instructions given to the jury were really important. You know, the ones that explain what they need to think about.
Right.
Like, how to decide if Rice was right to rely on that promise.
I bet the party's lawyers tried to say those instructions were wrong or something. Did that work?
Oh, they tried.
Yeah.
But the court looked at them really closely and said, nope, they're good. They basically said the jury had to figure out if Rice's actions were serious and important. And, well, the evidence was pretty clear that they were.
No loopholes for the party there.
Nope.
So in the end, the jury sided with Rice.
They did, and they awarded her over $28,000 in damages.
Oh, wow, that's a good chunk of change. Was that, like, just a random number?
No, not at all. The goal wasn't to punish the party, remember? It was to make things right for Rice. Like, make up for what she lost because of that broken promise. So they calculated it based on her old job in Maryland and all the costs of moving to Alaska.
Oh, that makes sense. It was about, like, fixing the wrong and making sure she wasn't worse off because of what the party did.
Exactly. It shows how courts try to be fair. And this whole thing with promissory estoppel, it's a way to protect people even when there's no fancy written contract.
This case is pretty amazing. It really shows that sometimes, you know, the law has to bend a little to make things right.
I agree. It's all about finding that balance between what's written and what's fair.
So this whole case, it really shows how powerful promissory estoppel is. It's like even something like the statute of frauds can get, you know, kind of pushed aside.
Yeah, it definitely throws a wrench in things. You can't just assume that, oh, just because an agreement wasn't written down, it's automatically no good.
Right.
Also, it's like being fair and whether someone actually relied on a promise, that matters more than a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that the law isn't just about rules, you know, black and white. Sometimes you got to look at the situation and, like, make things right.
Exactly. And this case, it's not just for lawyers. You know what I mean? This affects everyone.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Think about it. How many times do we, like, rely on someone's word?
Yeah, all the time.
A friend says they'll help you out with something, a contractor gives you a price, all that. What if they back out and you're stuck?
Oh, yeah, you're right. We do this all the time. From, like, borrowing something to, like, bigger things like business deals or even, like, lending money to someone.
Exactly. So, yeah, this case was about a job. But this idea of promissory estoppel, it can apply to all sorts of situations.
Right, right.
It shows you that even if there's no official contract, you might still have some legal options if you relied on a promise and things went wrong.
So should we, like, get every single promise notarized now? Like, even if it's something small?
No, necessarily. But there are some things to learn from all this. First, whenever you can, get it in writing.
Right.
Even if it's just an email, you know, it just makes things clear and can protect you later on.
Like a safety net.
Yeah, exactly. And second, if you are relying on someone's word, think about how you'd prove they said it. Save emails, texts, voicemails, whatever. Anything that shows what happened.
Right. So if you have to prove it, you've got the receipts.
Exactly. And last but not least, if you do get messed over by a broken promise, like, and you lose out because of it, to be afraid to talk to a lawyer.
Right.
You might have a better case than you think, especially if you can show those promissory estoppel things we talked about.
Yeah, it's good to know there are options, even if you don't have a contract. You know, it's like, the law's there for everyone, not just lawyers.
Right. It's all about fairness.
Okay, so we talked about the facts of the case, all the legal stuff, and even some tips for everyone listening. But there's something that's been on my mind.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
You said this case could make the statute of frauds weaker, right? But couldn't it also make it stronger? Like, by having this exception, it makes sure the rule isn't used to be unfair.
That's a really good point. It's a debate that, like, law professors have been arguing about forever.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, some people say that if you let promissory estoppel go around the statute of frauds, it'll just lead to more lawsuits. Like, everyone will be suing over every little thing they said to each other.
Right, and then nobody knows what's a real agreement anymore.
Exactly. It could be like a slippery slope. But on the other hand, there's the argument that promissory estoppel is like a balance. It stops people from using a statute of frauds to get away with bad stuff.
Yeah, like we want to encourage people to write things down, but we don't want anyone making promises they don't intend to keep just because they didn't put it on paper.
Yeah, it's about making sure the law isn't used to trick people.
That makes sense.
So it all comes back to finding that balance, right? And in Rice's case, the court was clearly on her side. They felt that enforcing the promise was the only fair thing to do, even without the written contract.
Yeah, it was more about like the spirit of the agreement and what she did based on it.
Exactly. This whole thing has made me think about the legal system in a new way.
Me too.
It's not just about like memorizing laws, it's about understanding why they're there and applying them fairly.
Yeah, this case really highlights that. And who knows, maybe this case will inspire future lawyers to come up with even better ways to handle these tough situations.
Oh, for sure. There are so many smart people out there figuring out how to make sure justice is served, even when things get complicated.
Absolutely. Well, it feels like we've pretty much covered everything about this fascinating case, all the legal twists and turns, the human side of it, and even some advice for our listeners.
Yeah, it's been a really great deep dive, and it just shows how the law can protect our rights, but also make us think critically about how it works in real life.
Well said. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this journey into the world of broken promises, promissory estoppel, and the Alaska Democratic Party. Hopefully you learned something new, got a new perspective, and maybe even had a few laughs along the way.
And until next time, keep those legal brains working, those contracts solid, and always remember, a spoken promise might not always hold up in court, but a good argument with strong evidence can really help you out.
So what would you have done if you were Kathleen Rice?
That's a really, really tough question, you know? Like, it's easy to look back and say, oh, I would have done this or that, but in the moment with this big opportunity,
Right.
I can totally see why someone would just go for it.
Exactly. And it's not just the job itself, you know, it's like a new challenge, a new place to live, this whole different life.
Yeah, totally.
It's easy to get swept up in it all and like not think about all the legal stuff.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's the human side of things. Emotions play a big part in our decisions, especially big ones like this.
It's that whole heart versus head thing.
Exactly.
My heart's like, go for it, this is awesome. But then your head's like, wait, hold on, shouldn't we get this in writing?
Yeah, totally. And that's why this case is so important, you know. It reminds us to be careful even with people we trust
Right.
and to always think about like clear communication and getting things down on paper.
It's not about not trusting people.
Right.
It's more like protect yourself and make sure everyone's on the same page. It's like
Exactly.
trust but verify.
Exactly. A little bit of, you know, healthy skepticism never hurts.
Right.
So, to everyone listening, if you're ever in a similar spot, just take a breath, think about the risks, don't be afraid to ask questions,
Yeah.
get it in writing if you can. It might seem like a hassle, but it could save you a lot of trouble later.
Good advice. Well, I think we've really dug into every little detail of this case. We talked about the law, the human side of things, and even some tips for everyone.
It's been a great deep dive. It just shows how the law can be there for us, but also make us really think about how it's used in real life.
Definitely. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this journey into broken promises, promissory estoppel, and the Alaska Democratic Party.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We hope you learned something new and maybe even had a little fun along the way.
And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp, those contracts solid, and remember, a verbal promise might not always cut it in court, but a good argument with solid evidence can really make a difference.
That's a wrap on this deep dive.